You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Marie Lorenz. She is an artist living and working in New York, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about her current projects. Marie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I was also going to ask, are you represented by Jack Henley now? Is that your gallery?
I am.
Okay. So to begin with, what are you working on right now in your current, what is happening in your studio or?
Well, I'm getting ready for a show that will be at Jack Henley in April of 2014. So although it seems far away, it's kind of creeping up. And I'm working on a video similar to my show there almost 2 years ago. It'll be a series of videos and then these objects and sculptures kind of surrounding that offer sort of clues to the video. But this week I'm working on all these prints where I find all this trash and garbage on the beach and then I figure out ways to print it. And I'm working on these big sort of circular, almost mandala-looking prints of where I ink and stamp the things that I find on the beach into these big circles.
That sounds fascinating and an interesting exploration of mediums. As I understand your work, its primary motivation or objective is looking at things from the vantage point of the water through these boats you actually build, but it
right.
also has to do with everything that is part of that. It sounds like that's extending to the beach, the water, materials, and more.
Yeah, it has been lately. I always have, part of my practice is always exploring in the boats that I build, and sometimes, but then I also do a lot of printmaking and sculpture, and sometimes those two kind of forks come together, and sometimes they're very separate, but right now in my exploration of the New York waterways, I've just been struck by how much debris is on the coast, in sort of the intertidal zone on the coast, and I've been collecting and trying to, record that debris, figure out what to do with that debris. And so in that sense, the exploration and the printmaking and sculpture are kind of coming together, sort of becoming unified around this, flotsam that I've been finding washed up.
Fascinating. And are you also teaching?
I do. I teach at Yale.
Right.
I'm not teaching this semester. I'm on sabbatical this semester, but I teach printmaking in the painting department at Yale.
So let's move back a little bit to the beginning of your career. What was the first experience you think you had with art that made you think either this was interesting, it could be as a child or a teen or later, but was there a point where you suddenly thought, wow, art is a subject that you could explore or that was of great interest to you?
Well, I always drew, and my parents were certainly encouraging of that. But when I was in seventh grade or something, my mom, I'm not sure how she met a woman named Kim Hunt. My dad was in the military, so I grew up sort of moving around. But my mom met a woman named Kim Hunt in Vista, California, I guess when I was in seventh or eighth grade, who gave lessons. She was a ceramic artist and sculptor, and she gave private ceramic lessons out of her garage in Vista, California. And so my mom signed me up for, a day a week or something to work with this ceramic artist. But she was so much more than a ceramic artist. I mean, she was just really involved. She was just had led this really amazing sort of aesthetic life and sort of turned me on to thinking about things as an artist and thinking about it more as a lifelong pursuit. I think of some of the conversations and things, and I was just sort of blown away, and I loved, and then she would let me, my mom signed me up for a day a week of lessons, but then I would kind of hang out in her studio and work on my projects. She was just so generous and would let me kind of work on my projects just while she was working. And that's when I sort of saw what a kind of a grown-up artist was like. And so that's, I think, when I started thinking about it as like a, you know, a path.
And how old were you then? That was...
I must have been like 12 or 13. But, you know, people, a lot of times when I give lectures and talk about the boat projects and talk about building boats and being on the water and exploring, people ask, I think, you know, their first question all the time is, well, did you grow up on the water? How did you? And the answer to that is definitely yes. So I think, you know, I grew up, my dad was a big canoer, boater, kayaker. We would rent sailboats all the time. I was sailing solo when I was 6 years old, and with, you know, because every military base would have like a little marina where he would rent sailboats and they would give lessons and stuff. So I was always around little boats and not...
Which is like a small sunfish.
We would go out in little sunfishes or little sabots. And I was... So I've been sailing and kayaking and canoeing since I was very little. And so that sort of, you know, I didn't really think of it as an art or a project or something probably till college, but I grew up around, you know, around little boats in the water.
And so what was the next stage for you after the that experience with the Surround Sister at 12 and you're going through high school? Why did you decide to go to, what happened when you were going to college, and what directed you there towards the arts?
Well, my dad encouraged me. He wanted me to go to a state that we, in the military, he was in the military and he was still a resident of Washington State where we had lived when I was a kid. And so he was sort of pushing me, encouraging me to go to Washington State School for college. But then he sent me on a trip where I looked around at colleges and I looked at Rhode Island School of Design, and I couldn't believe it. It just seemed like art school just seemed like a complete heaven. And so I remember standing in front of my parents sort of when I got back from the trip and just like begging them to, you know, to help me pay for art school, which they did. And I got scholarships, and I got one from the Marine Corps Officers Wives Club. And I also worked through school, and I also took loans out myself, but my parents took loans out to help me pay for it.
So what was your experience in RISD and your years there? What year was that?
I went to RISD from 91 to 95, and it was just incredible. I'd never known, you know, my dad was in the military, and I grew up sort of in suburbs near military bases, and going to RISD just really opened my eyes to, you know, everybody. It was like the weirdest kid from every high school in America, and I was just like in heaven. And the other thing that happened at RISD was that this is where sort of the boat project started, was that when I was in school there, the downtown waterfront district was being formed. So they were ripping up I-95 and the train tracks up out of the downtown city center and revealing this old canal system that ran under the city. And so me and my friends would explore the area, and I started building boats to get into. There were miles of tunnels that went under the city, these waterways.
Oh my God, that's so exciting! I'd love to hear about that, because I was in Providence at that time, and I remember hearing that. I mean, here was this canal running through the city, and I think they called it the widest bridge in the world.
Right, exactly.
Something like that, because it was basically, you didn't know there was a canal there.
It was parking lots and roads that went over the entire thing.
So at that time, they were just beginning construction to reveal parts of it. It I don't know if it was completed during your time there, but they were just starting.
When did you live there, or when did you spend time there?
I think it was in the early 90s, so, 89, 91...
Yeah, that's like right when I got there. So I got there in 91, and they were sort of like this, the downtown was like a huge construction site with this mucky kind of muddy river running through the middle of it. And then by the end of the time, they had built, you know, the amphitheater and all that stuff that is now the downtown waterfront.
So tell me, how did you explore those? Because that was a fantasy of mine, and the other people, but you look at them and you think, oh my God, you know, that seems like some secret underwater world running through.
I know, it was. It truly was. And so I started building these tiny rowboats that could get into, like, I mean, you know, I realize now that they were sewer tunnels. I built these tiny rowboats, and my friends and I would row up into basically the sewer tunnels of Providence.
How did you build those? I'm sorry to interrupt, but how did you build those boats? Where did you? I know it's no simple task. I've done carpentry too, and it's no simple task to build a boat. How are you building?
Well, I was uninhibited by any knowledge of carpentry, so it almost was easier. The first one that I built was, I built out of like a 2x4. I mean, it's so crazy when I think that it actually worked, but I built like this crazy 2x4 frame that was vaguely sort of boat shaped. And then I bent sheet aluminum over the, I guess I thought I was making like an aluminum canoe or something, but I bent sheet aluminum over the frame and then caulked the aluminum. And then the method that I kind of settled on, that one was sort of crazy and heavy, but the method that I kind of settled on after a while was that I would build a plywood frame. I would cut with a jigsaw, I would sort of make a plywood frame, and then I would stretch canvas over it, and then use roofing tar to tar the canvas. And that was kind of like the simple, so it was a skin on frame canoe basically. And I built a bunch like that, that were all under the, my friend figured out a way to lift them on a pulley system up under the bridges in the downtown district, waterfront district. And so if you knew how to like climb under these bridges, you could lower the boats and go out into the canal system.
Oh my God! And did your father build boats too? Did you see him doing that or no?
No, it was really just kind of learning. I mean, and this is before widespread use of the internet too. So I was just kind of like making it up as I went along. After college, I went to a boat building school where I actually learned to steam. You know, they mill their own timber and use all hand tools. It was a boat building school in Sausalito, California. And so then I actually learned. The stuff that I do now is somewhere in between. It's not really the fine art of, you know, boat building, and it's not as crazy as I used to do it, but it's sort of a comfortable medium.
So in those first trips, which sounds pretty scary, and I imagine I'd love to hear about the first trip, I picture that it's just incredibly dark underneath there, and you can't see where you're going. What did you see in the first trip under there? And this was an art project at the time. That's how you considered it? I don't know if you were collecting, photographing, but you were building a boat and going into the canals as part of what you were doing at RISD, correct?
Yeah, and I was majoring in printmaking, and so it was, you know, I would figure out different ways to kind of projectize it. I would take pictures under there, or I would do performances where people would come down to the water and see us in the boats doing something. Like, I was pretty into like puppets and stuff too. So we would like make, I would, you know, my friends and I would be in costumes in the boats. And so there was various ways, but I don't think that I successfully, I just loved it. And I couldn't I think I struggled to figure out a way to make it visual or make it kind of read as an artwork. But it was incredible. The other thing is that we used to go in there at night a lot because we didn't really know whether it was legal or not. And I don't think the city really knew. I mean, we were certainly trespassing when we were in the construction zones and things, but I don't think the city, I remember telling an art teacher at RISD about what we were doing, what I wanted to do for a project. And they were like, well, why don't you find out from the city codes whether it's, you know, the rules around it. And I, for months and months, I asked all these people at the city hall and looked on the records and all this stuff. And there wasn't any jurisdiction of the canal. And, you know, every once in a while the police would see us and be like, you want to die in there? You know, they would like chase us out of there. But there was just no one really knew what the rules were. It was unclear. And so a lot of times we'd go in there at night and sort of be creeping around with flashlights and stuff. And it looks like, you know, it was a smelly, gross waterway, but there was crazy. I mean, I remember at one point seeing these like weird, almost like jellyfish things that were floating around in there. You know, we'd see nutria swimming around in there. So those big sort of like rat, muskrat things. I mean, it was amazing. and it really sort of like whet my appetite for exploring waterways and cities.
But you never fell off the boat in there?
No, no. Well, I fell off further out into the bay there, you know, because it widens into Narragansett Bay, and there's a big seawall that separates it from the, and I was definitely on the canal side, but it was further out to the bay. But, you know, we would sort of muck. Sometimes I would be like up to my knees in it or something, but I never was fully submerged in the canal, in the growth part of the canal.
So that sounds like a wonderful, wonderful experience during RISD. And upon graduating, how did you then see the practice of what you were doing? Because on one level, you're a very straight printmaker. You're using prints in a variety of ways. And then you're when did it come together where you were? Well, I guess it came together right as you were talking now. But at the end of your undergraduate degree, what were you feeling about your art practice? Where was it then?
Well, I moved to San Francisco, and I was and you know, I was working. I worked in a print. I tried, you know, as a graduate of the printmaking major, you sort of find out about print houses and working for a master printer, and which I sort of, you know, tried to do, but it's hard to kind of break into to those ranks. So I worked just for a commercial. I worked for a commercial silk screener, and I was doing the boat projects, and I guess for years after that, I moved to San Francisco, then I moved to Russia, then I moved to Savannah, Georgia, and in every place I was kind of doing, you know, I was working full time, and I was also doing the boat projects, and you know, like trying to figure out how the exploration could be presented as an artwork, and it wasn't really until I got to New York and developed the project that I call the Tide and Current Taxi, which has been ongoing. You know, since I got to New York, it wasn't until that I kind of figured out how the exploration could be presented as an art project.
When you were traveling around, was that just for travel, or you were teaching? What was happening as you were traveling all around?
I was working. I moved. You know, San Francisco. I was working for the screen printer. In Russia, I was working for the U.S. consulate. I was working in like the mailroom. I was working in like the basement mailroom of the U.S. consulate in St. Petersburg. But I moved there because my dad and mom were living there. My dad had a Fulbright and he was teaching there, and so I just thought it would be interesting to sort of check out. And St. Petersburg, you know, has all those canals and things, so I moved there to kind of see what the, you know.
Well, and that's a bit how you grew up too. This constant moving and motion.
Right. Right. Exactly.
As well. Okay, so then you're back in New York and beginning the work of the Tide and Current Taxi project. And is that when you think things came together and your art career, so to speak, began to gel or take off?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, before that, the work had always been about kind of looking at the boat, like I was making the boats and I was doing the exploration. And so the only thing I could think was like, okay, you watch me out in the water, like the audience is on shore and the, you know, the artist is in the water and you're sort of watching me perform. But after moving to New York and realizing I did a circumnavigation in a homemade boat where I took photographs and sent them to a website. And that's when I sort of realized like the project could sort of link the web with exploration. And instead of looking at me, instead of the photographs being sort of me, then the photographs would be back into the city. And so I saw the computer and the boat as sort of this porthole that you would look back at the city. And that's, I think, when it kind of like solidified the project, thinking about like the artwork being a view back into the city rather than being of me. And then using the internet, that is a way that that kind of solidified my thinking about it as well.
And that was, of course, before Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think about how hard it was to, I think, you know, it took like me and five friends, like, you know, a week to figure out how to take pictures and put them on this website. I mean, I was also sort of computer illiterate at that point, but it was funny how hard it was to get a live feed photo thing online. And I think about how how amazing it is that that all just happens seamlessly now.
And what year was that? That
was in 2005. There were certainly other people that were doing it really well, but I was sort of bumbling around with it.
You know, I mean, to me, it also what seems to really gel there is it's a way of seeing, you know, you're a printmaker doing a variety of kinds of works, and artists are always looking for, you know, how are they seeing the world differently or uniquely, and it seems to present itself so clearly in the Tide and Current Taxi project with photographs, like you're saying, that it's about the way the artist is perceiving the world, which is from a different vantage point of anyone else. And that's often
right.
a difficult thing to articulate and be clear about.
Right.
So the next step was you circumnavigated Manhattan. Is that what the circumnavigation project was?
Right. I circumnavigated Manhattan in 2005. And that's kind of when I realized that the Tide was so significant and the relationship with the internet and how significant the Tide was. And then I guess I did the circumnavigation in the summer. Maybe it was even the same summer that I started the Tide and Current Taxi.
Of 2005 or 2006,
right.
And so when did you first start showing in galleries in New York? When did your prints or your documents from the project? Because when you say you were performing out in the boat, what was the performance? It was simply you moving along, wasn't it? Or was it?
Yeah, it was. There was no event. There was no real. You know, there wasn't a. You know, these would be sort of unpublicized, sort of non-events. But I started sort of scrabbling around, like, pretty instantly upon getting to New York. I started to, I lived in this warehouse in Greenpoint, and we would have shows. I remember within, like, a few months of moving to New York, we had this massive show in our warehouse where I built a river that went through my studio. You kind of climbed in, like, a hole in the garage and paddled through in this tiny little boat through a river that I had built in my studio to get into like this big party where there were my other roommates who were artists also did projects in there. And
all the guests had to get into a boat to go across this small waterway.
Yeah, you had to get to the party, you had to like get into the boat and cross. We let people out through, there was also like, you know, you could also get out through the front door, but we only let people out that way. To get in, you had to paddle.
Where was that in Williamsburg? That wasn't it wasn't Greenpoint. That wasn't a 1205 building at the end, was it?
No, it was on Huron Street. It was
on
in
Huron
between
Street.
McGinnis and Provost on Huron Street.
And
it was great. There was a lot of art. I moved in with a woman that I went to Rodin School of Design with and that I had just known for years, and it was a really great place to move. We had, like, very cheap rent, and we had – everybody was an artist, and we would have, you know, art shows and stuff in the house. So it was a good, like, way to land in New York, kind of, you know.
Right.
Getting to see work and getting to kind of show work.
And when was the next gallery show? When was your first gallery show? I guess that would be after that.
Woman, Melissa, a friend had a little space on Grand Street, and now I'm forgetting what it was called, and she was sort of it was a labor of love. She lived in the space, and it was just a little space, and she made postcards for it and really tried to get the word out there. And that was my first kind of show in New York, was in her space.
And it was a prints, or what were you showing in that space?
I showed a sculpture. I made this ice sculpture in the backyard, and I made this little comic book. It was called The Five Coldest Nights of My Life. And it was a little comic book about the five coldest nights of my life. And then I made this ice sculpture where there was this kind of these, like, it was sort of a gazebo where there were these five panels that each. So it had something to do with kind of exploration, but it didn't have anything to do with, like, the boat projects or anything.
Hmm. And after that, what led to more shows, or what did you think was a show that kind of brought things together? I also remember there being you getting some press around that time, right? About
There was
certain.
about the Tide and Current Taxi. The Tide and Current Taxi is always sort of, from the very first year of the Tide and Current Taxi, there was like a New Yorker article about it, and the next year there was an article in the New York Times about it. So the Tide and Current Taxi has always been kind of, people have been interested in it almost as like a, I don't know, sort of like personal interest story in the paper or something. But it didn't, it doesn't, I would say that still it doesn't have much traction. Like the art world or something, but it has, but it gets a lot of people sort of like read about it and follow it that are kind of not connected to the art world. But
Which
yeah,
is
that
interesting.
around like 2005 or 6, there was some articles about it in the newspaper and in the New Yorker.
And the
And then I didn't, and then I didn't start, I started showing it. I went to Rome with the American Academy in Rome in 2009, and then when I got back, I had my first show at Jack Hanley Gallery. Like, so I guess that was in like 2010.
How did that happen, the first show at Jack Henley?
I have a friend who shows there named Cal Speletic, who was a friend from San Francisco, and he's known Jack forever. And it was just a totally fortunate. I just have, I'm so grateful to Cal. I had just seen Cal in Rome. He had came to visit in Rome, and I showed him this video that I had made, where I built a sailboat when I was in Rome, and I wrecked the sailboat completely on accident. I capsized the boat, and but there was a video, but I had a video camera on board, and so there's this video of me kind of struggling and swimming through the water, getting, back to shore, and it's a crazy video. It's a windy, stormy looking day, and it just looks like. It looks like I'm dying, and but
Oh my God.
the video shot from like my perspective, so you don't see me at all. You just sort of hear me struggling through the water,
Well,
and so
and the fact that the
Cal,
boat capsized and you're swimming to land, I mean, obviously the camera was in a waterproof casing, I guess.
it was like a little. My dad had given me this little. He's a mountain rescue. He does these volunteer mountain rescue things. He'd lent me this little like portable adventure camera. It was kind of like the GoPro before GoPro cameras existed. And he and so I just had this little like, it wasn't like a, it was just like this little cheapo adventure camera or something. And but it caught this really amazing like grainy weird quality video. And so Cal showed, when I was back, Cal had a show at Jack Hanley Gallery, I think in like 2009 or something, and he and him and Jack Hanley were like sitting around, and he's like, "Oh, you got to see my friend Marie's crazy video of her almost dying in Italy." And he showed Jack Hanley, and Jack Hanley asked for my number. And then I showed that video at his gallery in I think 2010.
Huh. And since then, the Tide and Current Taxi has continued. And what form does that take? You continue to take both your boats out of your studio and build them and explore the shores of Manhattan?
Yeah, so the way the Tide and Current Taxi works is that I take trips out in the boat and then make a website about it. Each trip that I take out, I publish a little web blog that describes the trip, and so people you a lot of people find me online because of that. Like they look up some specific place, and then there's a Tide and Current Taxi entry about me going there in the boat, and so people email me online, they find out about it online and they email me, and then I schedule a trip based on the tidal current. So somebody will say, "I'd love to go see the coastline of the Bronx because, I love it when people have like a personal connection to the area or some thing that they want to, explore or figure out." Like one of my favorite trips was this woman, Samantha Hunt, is a writer and wrote a book about Barren Island, and then wanted to go see the coastline of Barren Island by boat, as she was finishing her book. And so it's always nice to have somebody with kind of a story about the area so that I can tell my story through their eyes. And so then I schedule a trip, and usually it takes sort of a while for the you know, for all of that to kind of work out. You know, people's schedules in New York are crazy, and mine is too. And so it, but I have, you know, I usually have about 20 trips a summer, maybe 10 or 20 trips a summer. And each summer has a theme. So, you know, I'll ask. So in the beginning of the summer, I'll send out an email and I'll say, can anybody think of something that has to do with garbage? That's the theme. And then, you know, people will ask me to go places, you know, with that specifically in mind.
So then essentially you are their taxi. Obviously,
exactly.
You're not charging them for the ride, but you're their taxi and you're giving them a tour as well as they're giving you a tour. Is that correct?
And I almost think of it more as like they're, you know, we're taking, I think of it as they're giving me a tour. We're kind of taking this tour together because I don't really know, you know, I don't know that. I mean, I've learned things along the way, but mostly it's from taking the trips and having people tell me what they know about the area. So yeah. And I always say, yeah, of course there's no charge, but I always say that the exchange is sort of, you know, the passenger gets a ride in the boat. Well, and actually they're not even a passenger, they're paddling as well. So my participant gets a ride in the boat and I get to, my exchange is that I get to tell the story. And the joke that I always say about it is that it's sort of an uneven exchange because although we may not get where we thought we were going and, you know, a lot of unexpected things happen along the way, you know, I always get a good story. So the exchange is sort of uneven.
And during this time, so did you get an MFA or?
Yeah, I went to Yale for a master's degree in sculpture. That was like between Savannah. That was right before I moved to New York. So I went to Yale in 2000 to 2002.
And did that just kind of cement your practice for you? I mean, what seems wonderful about that is did Yale really change the way you were perceiving your explorations and the Tide and Current Taxi project?
Yeah, I was sort of stuck. It definitely did. I was Yale, and then I also went to Skowhegan a couple years after that. And I think it was somewhere between the two. When I was at Yale, I think I was pretty stubborn. I was doing these projects that had to do with, like, I don't know, kind of like comic books and performances that had to do with costumes and kind of like I was still in that space of like looking at the water as this kind of fantasy narrative space. And I stuck with that while I was at Yale. I really like sort of stuck to my guns about it and kept doing it even though everybody, you know, thought it was the most terrible thing. And then it wasn't until a few years after that the Tide and Current Taxi started to happen that I changed tack a little bit. But it was definitely, you know, Yale definitely like gave me the tools to sort of think about it. But while I was there, I was pretty sort of stubbornly sticking to the, I don't know, how I had done things since undergrad.
Right, which was working more with printmaking and things that weren't directly involved with your explorations.
Right, right.
And so now you're teaching there. That happened shortly after graduation that you began teaching?
No, I was I graduated in 2002 and I started teaching there in 2009.
Hmm.
So I'd been living in New York for a while and then I went to Rome and when I came back I started teaching there.
And when you were living in New York, you were doing different jobs or were
Yeah, I worked as a, I taught a little bit of my friend Melissa Brown taught at Lehman College in the Bronx and got me a job teaching printmaking there. So I had a few semesters of teaching under my belt, but most of my income was, I worked as a carpenter. I built shipping crates to move artwork.
Hmm. Which increased your carpentry skills then. You're no longer building boats in a way that's certainly not as crude as you were, but your skills.
That's true. And now it's funny because now the boats look like crates. I've kind of built them like shipping crates. They like have, you know, they have like this like plywood, they're like a plywood faces around kind of a pine structure. and LaRouche at the
same
time. The first couple in New York were all out of like scrap crates and stuff.
Well, this has been really wonderful talking to you. This is a fascinating project that you've created that's continuing to carry you into so many realms. Is there one story you want to tell about an exploration that stuck out or was very dramatic for you or very subtle?
The time current actually is always really amazing. Just, you know, my kind of like artist statement about it is, you know, that it changes, that going out on the water in New York changes people's perspective about the city. But it really does. You know, you can go out on the water and just New York sometimes can seem sort of overwhelming and crowded, but being out on the water just, you know, you can like not pass another human being all day long. And so it's really great to be out there. But I don't know, maybe my story would be that one time I was actually, I was shooting a video, so I was alone in the boat and it was getting near dark. I had come all the way from like, Red Hook. I had come all the way up the East River from Red Hook and I was coming into the Newtown Creek. So that's like all the way north.
Wow. And you're rowing by.
And I'm rowing. Yeah, I'm rowing. And I come into the Newtown Creek and it's getting kind of dark and I actually got lost in the Newtown Creek. And there's a couple little branches and I just didn't know exactly which branch I had gone down and I couldn't figure out what street I was on. And so it's dark and I was lost, but it was so wonderful and it was just kind of barely beginning to snow. It was in winter and I had been shooting this video and I was so happy. I was thinking like, when else could you just be lost in New York City alone at night and be so safe and so comfortable? But in the middle, you know, in the middle of the Newtown Creek, there's just no one knew I was there. No one could see, you know, the Newtown Creek is just this really like sort of industrial wasteland zone in Bushwick. So it was just a great. I sort of laughed at myself, and of course, you know, I just took out my iPhone to figure out where I was. But I tried to extend the moment of feeling like lost in Bushwick.
Right, right. Now that we have iPhones, there's no such thing as being truly lost.
Yeah, exactly. Unless your battery runs out.
That's wonderful. And in closing, is there this reaches, you know, artists as well as non-artists, and certainly Yale students as well as many other artists around the country and the world. Is there anything you want to say to artists in closing about making art or anything you'd like?
I guess, you know, the thing that it seems like a lot of your interviews and your interest are sort of about like how, you know, the trajectory of somebody's kind of life as an artist. And I think that one thing, and this is sort of what, you know, it's kind of like a thing that I tell my students all the time. It's really, you know, having good friends is so much more important than all the institutions you go to just having a good friend group that you stick with and that you are loyal to is more valuable than all of the degrees that you'll get and, you know, points on your resume and everything. I think having like a really great friend group is a huge thing that helps. It helps you, you know, stay in touch with art and your own art, their art, and it's a really important part of, I think,
I've heard that before. And the friend group you're talking of is also of other artists who are supportive or no?
Yeah, but not just that. You know, artists that are supportive, you know, I think of the friends that I, you know, have known since RISD, some of whom have gone on to make jewelry or work for MTV or, you know, all kinds of things. And it's, just finding sort of a support group, whether it's artists or, you know, your people that surround you.
Marie, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It was really fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.